Welcome to Global Focus with me, Daniel Finnan. This week, we're going to hear about a new book describing what some people consider the greatest murder case in French history. Flight UTA-772 was blown up over the Sahara Desert in the late 80s. Some have described it as the forgotten flight because it was somewhat overshadowed by the Lockerbie bombing. On the 19th of September 1989, UTA-772 was travelling to Paris from Congo-Brazzaville via Djamena in Chad. And while flying over the desert in southern Niger, a dark grey suitcase in the hold exploded, bringing down the plane and killing 170 people on board. It sparked an investigation, and eventually a Paris court found six Libyans guilty in absentia, handing down life sentences. Following a forensic examination of the damaged wreck, a small piece of circuit board was traced back to Libya. The motive for Libya was said to be revenge on the French government for supporting Chad in a border dispute. However, the story didn't stop there. We spoke to a lawyer who pursued the case to get a legal settlement for the American families of the victims. Welcome to Stu Neuberger, the author of the book The Forgotten Flight. Why did you decide to write this book now?
I spent many years as a lawyer working on the case that is called The Forgotten Flight. I finished the case several years ago and eventually decided that because the case really was not well known in the U.S., or even around the world outside of France and parts of Africa, that there were many aspects of it that were both timely and important to understand the work I had done.
How did you get involved in the case initially against the Libyan government?
In 2001 and early 2002, I'd already been handling a number of cases against Iran and a couple against Libya when I was approached by Doug Matthews, the owner of the plane, whose company Interlease had leased the aircraft to UTA, wanted me to represent his company for the loss of the aircraft. And then he also brought in seven American families, the seven American citizens who were also killed on the flight. And so I represented the owner of the plane and the seven American families who lost a loved one to this act of terrorism. That's how I got involved in this particular case.
Now, there was another case which was brought by another association representing the victims' families. How was your case against the Libyan government different?
Of course, I have worked, or I did work closely with both the French authorities, including Judge Bruguière when I was handling the case, as well as the French victims who had organized themselves in France, both through François Radetzky and later through Guillaume de Noit de Saint-Marc. In France, and under the Napoleonic Code and the Civil Code, it is pretty much impossible to bring a case for damages against a sovereign state, even one that has committed mass murder, as Gaddafi in Libya had done here. The French state did indict six Libyan officials and agents for murder in Paris. However, President Chirac of France decided that he was not going to pursue the criminal prosecutions and instead negotiated effectively a diplomatic deal with Gaddafi, which meant that no one from Libya ever faced justice for murder in the Paris courts. The only other aspect of the French victims that could be a participant in the proceedings was as a part of the criminal case. And after the criminal case was dropped, so too were any efforts by the French victims to pursue Gaddafi and Libya. Thus, my case in Washington was the only one left alive to pursue Gaddafi and Libya and the six individuals for murder and terrorism.
Did it affect you working a case about the killing of so many people? Did it affect you personally?
Well, it always affects you. You know, no one can be that cold-hearted. I handle a lot of cases. I handled a case in Pakistan involving Pan Am 73, a jumbo jet that had stopped en route from India to New York, and while it was taking on passengers in Karachi, was attacked by Libyan agents, killing many people. I also handled a number of embassy bombing attacks arising from Beirut, Lebanon, and Nairobi, Kenya. So sadly, I am not a stranger to these types of mass killings and mass murder. You never get used to them and you never become hardened to them. This case was particularly unique because the government of Libya defended the case in the federal court in Washington throughout the proceedings. Indeed, after I had obtained a very large judgment against the Libyan state, President George W. Bush and Colonel Gaddafi entered into a bilateral settlement agreement, which was endorsed by the U.S. Congress, which therefore got rid of my judgment and all the other pending cases against Libya, including the remaining pieces of the Pan Am 103 Lockerbie case in New York and the LaBelle Disco case from Berlin, Germany. All those cases were resolved when Libya agreed to pay the U.S. $1.5 billion to resolve all of the outstanding cases.
The former intelligence chief under Gaddafi, Abdallah Zanussi, has been convicted for his role in the UTA 772 attack. Do you think he'll ever be extradited to France? Because he's currently in detention in Libya.
One would hope so, and I know that the French authorities have attempted to make that happen. However, I also know that efforts to have Zanussi brought before the International Criminal Court has failed. And that, in fact, the ICC at The Hague, the International Criminal Court, has effectively ruled that the criminal proceedings against him in Libya can proceed. Now, he'll face the death penalty in Libya if he's ever convicted in Libya for all the crimes he's accused of. If he had been tried before the ICC in The Hague or in Paris in the pending criminal cases, he would not face the death penalty. So it's an interesting situation where Zanussi now may face the death penalty from his own legal system, but not from those countries outside of Libya who were affected by his terrorist activities.
What do you think could be learned from Zanussi in terms of the attack against the UTA 772 flight?
UTA 772, because of the extraordinary detective work by Judge Bruguière and his team, pretty much found forensically and on the evidence that the Libyan state, the highest levels, carried out the attack. There is no question about it. And that's been confirmed by many sources. In contrast, the Pan Am 103 flight that crashed into Lockerbie, Scotland 9 months earlier, although I am convinced it was carried out by Libya, Libya may have had help in that bombing, but I'm confident Gaddafi was behind it, along with Zanussi and others. But as we all know, the criminal case involving Lockerbie never established the level of proof and forensic evidence that the French were able to accomplish with the UTA case. And that has always left open conspiracy theories and other doubters whether Gaddafi, Zanussi, and Libya were responsible for Pan Am 103. I believe they were, and I think it was just a difference of the investigations and a little bit of luck that the French were able to find the conclusive evidence to pin the UTA bombing on Gaddafi, Zanussi, and Libya.
So you think it's less about actually discovering more about the UTA 772 attack, more about finding out about the Lockerbie bombing, but also maybe at the same time finally seeing Zanussi held accountable?
Yes, and I'm sure he's being held, like Saif is being held, as a bargaining chip in the ever-continuing turmoil and crisis that is today's Libya. We shall see how it plays out.
Thank you very much to Stuart Neuberger, author of the book The Forgotten Flight. Following the uprising in Libya and the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, Zanussi fled the country. He was eventually arrested in Mauritania, having boarded a flight from Casablanca, flying on a fake Malian passport. Zanussi was then handed over to Tripoli. He's currently been held in Hadbar prison. Stu Neuberger's book, The Forgotten Flight, is published by One World Publications and is available online. For this week's Global Focus, I'm Daniel Finnan. Thanks for listening.